Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN. Perform, work out, energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. By Polar, winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we sent out 3,260 grants, totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. We've now raised over $112 million in our first 26 years. You can help out at challengedathletes.org. Check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here. The other night, had the opportunity to watch an amazing new documentary called Skid Row Marathon. It'll be coming out, I think, October 14th, 650 theaters nationwide. And the star of the movie, Judge Craig Mitchell, joins us. I know you probably go, oh, cringe, because the athletes are the stars. Judge Mitchell, how are you, sir?
I'm doing real well. Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you with us. And I know, as a longtime runner, this might have been one of your first experiences with the triathlon crowd.
It is. And you know what amazed me? Runners are a wonderful group of people, but, the tri folks that I met this past Friday sort of raised the bar. They couldn't have been more welcoming.
So, Judge Mitchell, for you, did you grow up as an endurance guy? Were you always a runner?
No, I actually was somewhat coerced at the age of 40 to pick up running.
Really? What led to that?
I was working as a prosecutor, a newly hired prosecutor in the LADA's office, and my boss was recruiting a team to run the Baker to Vegas law enforcement run.
Yep.
And he asked that I join the team, and I had always sort of been disinclined to run, but I figured it wouldn't help my career to say no to the man.
Good point.
So I bought my first pair of running shoes, and as they say, the rest is history.
I remember doing that event. I was on a media team, and I just remember being out in the middle of nowhere in the Las Vegas desert at like 3 a.m. going, I hope this guy driving behind me has had a lot of coffee and isn't going to run me over going 5 miles an hour through the desert. That was a crazy event. And so that lit the fire, and from then on, running became your thing?
From then on, I really took to it. I ran 9 Baker to Vegas races for the district attorney's team and, obviously progressed into running marathons and, just it becoming a major aspect of my life.
And in terms of marathon PR and things like that, how fast did you go?
My fastest marathon, I think, was a 3:35.
Wow, that's the real deal.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, that's right. And were you always dealing with back issues? Because when we were chatting the other day, and even in the film, you can see that you're dealing with some major spinal issues.
I have 7 vertebrae in my neck and lower back fused.
Wow.
So I've had neck and back issues for a long time. In fact, I lost complete use of my right arm, and that is what finally prompted them to, do 3 different surgeries to try and alleviate that.
And did that come from playing contact sports when you were younger, or just something congenital type of thing?
Perhaps contact sports. I played some football, and that was probably to my detriment.
So talk a little bit about your job. At the beginning of the film, where there's a scene and you're sentencing a man to 71 years in prison, obviously it's that type of responsibility can be weighing on anybody. How important has running been in sort of being that outlet for you?
I can't imagine a better therapy than running for someone that has to do what I have to do. I handled a trial last couple weeks that the individual will be sentenced on, and he's looking at 134 years to life.
Okay? 134 years basically is life, you think?
And this individual is 18 years of age. So, I mean, essentially, yes. I mean,
yeah.
He will be incarcerated for the rest of his life. And, you know, those type of propositions weigh heavily. And not only the individuals who I have to sentence, you know, but the victims of crime. I mean, to look at innocent people who are murdered, you know, children who are sexually abused in this trial where the guy's looking at 134 years to life, he was abusing a 9-year-old little girl.
Ugh.
Okay? And he videotaped some of this, and to have to watch that and process it. I told the lawyers the day afterwards, I couldn't sleep that night.
Right.
Okay? Well, yeah, and so to be able at lunchtime for an hour to get out and run and try and deal with it and to take the long runs on the weekends, I mean, it's essential to my mental health.
So what led to you going down to the Midnight Mission and starting to run with some of the homeless people there?
Interestingly enough, an individual, Roderick Brown, I sentenced him to prison. And when he was released from prison, he walked through the front doors of my courtroom and asks, you know, Judge Mitchell, do you remember me? And for some reason, he liked the way that I treated him, even though I sentenced him to prison. And he asked that I come down to Skid Row, where he was paroled. And he introduced me to some of the people who were involved in his recovery, who were providing shelter for him. And I talked with some of the individuals in the program, and they asked me if there was something that I could do to contribute to their program. And I said, well, how about starting a running club?
And that's where everything kicked off. Now, did Gabby Hayes, was she involved early on, the producer of the film, or did she read about the story and then come down and check it out?
She read about it in the Los Angeles Times, probably about a year after I started the program. The LA Times did a wonderful article about our first LA marathon. And Mark and Gabby Hayes read that article, and they reached out to me.
And what's fascinating to me is the athletes who are showcased in the film, really diverse group. You've got one gentleman who was convicted of murder to 29 years in prison, and then another gentleman who had, you know, was in a rock band and had gained 300 pounds and was homeless and became was a musician and reinvented himself as a composer. When you look at those stories, are those the moments and the stories that keep you able to do what you do as a judge?
Well, I certainly rejoice in people who are able to make a 180 in their life, who are able to, you know, take a very shattered life and rebuild it. You know, and sometimes you get incredible success stories. One of the individuals featured in the film, Rebecca Hayes, you know, was a heroin addict for years and years and, you know, just couldn't have fallen lower. And she's now a surgical nurse in Seattle, Washington. You know, those are wonderful stories. But, you know, now in my 8th year with the running club, there's so many stories of a similar nature. I mean, I can mention person after person after person, you know, and some of it, you know, it's just the fact that they're working full time now, that they're paying rent, that they're reconnected with their family, that they're back raising their children. You know, all of those things, you know, make it very easy for me on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays to get up at about 2:30 in the morning to get myself down to the Midnight Mission.
Is that when you get up at 2:30 in the?
I do.
Wow! And what time do you guys run?
We start at 5:45, but I ride my bike from my home to downtown. I then come into my courtroom, change into my running gear, you know, take care of some matters that I need to take care of, and then I run down to the mission.
You are a triathlete. I love that.
If there was some water I had to paddle through, you know, I think that the term would be appropriate.
So what are the rules that the runners have to follow in order to, because really the big thing is be able to travel, Right?
Correct.
The first one was you went to Accra in Ghana, and you had, I think, three runners that first time who went to Accra. What rules do they have to follow to be able to go on these trips?
They have to be consistent. They have to be consistent, and they have to maintain their sobriety. Okay? And, you know, for anyone who knows people who have addiction issues in their life, those are two really challenging prospects for people who have substance abuse issues. And it's challenging for people who are simply homeless. But after every run, I come back to my chambers. I check off who attended the run that day. And if you're consistent, and like I say, if you're clean and sober over the long haul, we're going to find a way to take you to an incredible place somewhere around the world.
So you've been, the first one was in Accra, and I asked you at the Tri Club meeting the other night, I'm going, I see the follow-ups with Jerusalem and Rome and these beautiful locations, and Accra is not that. It's not a gigantic marathon. It's a small marathon.
It is.
And if you look at where you're running through dirt streets and the air's not great.
It was not a close course. We were running, you know, breathing exhaust fumes from the trucks. No, it was challenging.
But there was a reason that you wanted to go there for your first one.
Correct. Many of our runners are African American. And, you know, I'm enough of a student of history to understand that a lot of African Americans in the United States can trace their roots back to the West Coast, the Guinea Coast of Africa. And so I knew it would be incredibly meaningful for our African-American runners to go back to Ghana to, you know, connect with people that, you know, share the same bloodline, to go to Cape Coast Castle in the northern part of Ghana, where undoubtedly their ancestors were held in the dungeons as they waited to board the slave ships. And I was not mistaken. I mean, when our runners were in Cape Coast Castle, we were there for hours and everybody was silent. I could see tears running down the faces of our runners. I mean, it was an overwhelming experience.
When I look at your athletes, and I keep saying athletes because they are.
They are.
They absolutely. Rafael Cabrera, his story and how honest he was, where he basically takes the movie watcher back to the site of where he was involved with that drive-by shooting and took a man's life, and how much that, you know, he deals with that every single day. Weren't you on the parole board to potentially either let him out or not let him out?
Yes. At most parole hearings, a representative from the district attorney's office is present. And generally speaking, the role of the district attorney in those settings is to oppose parole.
Right.
Okay. And I had expected, prior to meeting Rafael in person, to do precisely that. But then he comes into the room, and the parole commissioners are asking him questions, and he's explaining what he has done. And I tried to be objective, and the more he talked, and I became convinced, you know, after 20-some-odd years in prison, I thought our community would be better served if he reentered that community rather than remain incarcerated.
That has to be scary, though, because the easy thing is just keep the guy in prison, because what if he comes out and commits another crime?
You know, and I'm not some starry-eyed liberal, okay?
Right.
You know, but I've sat through enough of those hearings for many years. I prosecuted more murderers in Los Angeles County than any other prosecutor in this county, okay? So I sort of knew what I was dealing with. And I knew Rafael was the exception. And when you're that exceptional, you know, and if you're eligible for parole, then, you know, let's make it a meaningful hearing. If it's just going to be, you know, a charade and you're going to be denied, save everybody the time and energy.
So here's a guy who eventually gets to go on. I think he went to Rome, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
He went to Rome, so he actually received a passport, which had to be one of the highlights of his life.
Well, I mean, you know, he to turn back the clock and when, you know, in year 15, in year 20, in year 25, when he is sitting in a level four institution with no prospect of being released, to then to, you know, fast forward to when he is in Rome. No, I mean, it's just incredible. And not only is he in Rome, but he brought his mother. And for him to be able to treat her to that experience after 28 years of her having to travel to visit him in prison, I mean, you know, it's just was wonderful to behold.
Well, and the fact that he has a job that he, because I can't even imagine you come out with any type of record, somebody looking for an employee, the first person they're going to say no to is a convicted felon. Getting a job has to be so difficult. And Rafael started, didn't he start as not as an intern, but a trainee?
He found a program with the Department of Water and Power in Los Angeles where you could sign up to be an apprentice.
Yes.
And you have to go every month to put your name on the list. And so he did that for month after month after month. He finally gets selected to be an apprentice. Then he successfully completes that program. Then he applies for a full-time position. Department of Water and Power finally looks at his criminal history and says, no way. Okay? We were unaware of what you were convicted of. And then he notifies the union that represents the workers, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and they went to bat for him.
Which is awesome.
Absolutely. Okay, and you know, and now he is working in the Owens Valley with the Department of Water and Power. You know, he is involved in helping families of the incarcerated go visit their loved ones. Rafael wears me out with all the things that he does in the community. It's like he's making up for lost time.
Well, you can tell. You can tell. And you obviously are a believer in second chances.
I am. I mean, if we are honest with ourselves, I think we can all look back in our lives at various moments and say, you know, my parents gave me a second chance. This teacher gave me a second chance. Okay? This coach gave me a second chance. And, you know, we all benefit from those chances.
So, David asked you. He was living on the streets 10 years. He was one of the first members of Running Club. And it was I think there was the scene in the movie where he went down into that by the river.
In the riverbed.
The riverbed.
Right.
Showing that little hole that he lived in. Does it blow you away sometimes how some of these folks have, how they even have survived to the point where they could even be on the Running Club?
It is amazing. But, you know, a sad commentary, I guess, is that, you know, working on Skid Row to the extent that I have, I mean, you look at the living conditions and David Askew living in some little rat hole in the L.A. River is something that I see almost every day.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it just is staggering to what extent life can degrade to where that is your living situation.
So how do we, there's 58,000 homeless in LA and that's growing. How can that, well, one, in this day and age, how can that be? Because we're talking about our unemployment rate is as low as it's ever been. How do we turn that around? Obviously, you're doing your part, but that's, you know, ones and twos and threes. And I think you've taken, you know, like 25 runners to Rome and Jerusalem. How do we make a difference in what's going on with the homeless situation?
The people who are thoughtful in addressing the issue, I think, universally agree that there is not a easy answer, nor is there one answer. I think we are seeing the end result of the crack epidemic that decimated Los Angeles in the 80s and 90s, destroyed homes, caused children to be raised either in the foster care system, by grandparents who just couldn't monitor them sufficiently. I think it is a commentary in terms of, you know, some of the failures within our school system to keep these kids in a forward-moving direction. We certainly see now the result of the methamphetamine epidemic. There are just many reasons why lives spin out of control to the extent that we now have 58,000 people who are unproductive, living on Skid Row, many of them suffering from mental illness. I mean, I don't really think the public understands as well. Methamphetamine, if you use it enough, is going to cause methamphetamine-induced schizophrenia. And that is a mental health condition that is incurable. And so we have a significant population on Skid Row. What do you do with these people
right.
who have a profound mental illness and can, in many respects, never take care of themselves?
It's unbelievable.
It is. You know, and some of our efforts to, you know, rethink drug laws and decriminalizing, or reducing the sentences, for instance. You know, I've been in the criminal justice system long enough to realize, you know, turn the clock back 5 to 10 years. If a person had used cocaine or methamphetamine or heroin or something like that repeatedly, they were encouraged and induced to go into treatment programs.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
Within the last 2 years, that has come to a grinding halt. Now, you know, we've eliminated that from being considered as felony conduct. It is now misdemeanor conduct, given the overcrowding in the jails in Los Angeles. You get picked up for using or possessing any of those drugs. You do a couple nights in the county jail, and you're back out on the street.
So then they end up doing that over and over and over
again. Over and over again. And many times in my courtroom, you'll get somebody who'll come in and say, okay, sir, would you like a treatment program? And they'll pause for a moment and they'll ask, well, how long am I really going to be in jail if I turn down the treatment program? And their attorney will look over at them and say, maybe a day or two. And they'll say, I'll plead guilty. I want to be back out on the street so I can get some more drugs.
Wow. And then, and making the laws harsher, doesn't really solve it as well.
No, it doesn't. You know, and so you're hoping that the policymakers can find the middle ground.
Yes.
And we're not there. The pendulum has swung, in my opinion, too far to the point where no one has any incentive to get treatment.
Are you seeing people ending up in the street from prescription drugs, from oxycodone and things like that?
Yes, but far, far less than methamphetamine.
Okay.
I mean, methamphetamine is so cheap. And from what everybody tells me, some of the runners, you know, the high is so good. Okay. It is the drug of choice right now in Los Angeles.
Well, that's a great way to escape. If you're living in Skid Row, it's a great way to escape. So one of the stars of the film, Ben Shirley, just how he turned his life around from a 300-pound guy. He was a rock star and just went down alcohol and drugs. And I remember one of our professional triathletes by the name of Lionel Sanders, he had drug and alcohol. He was a top runner in high school and became, you know, went down the wrong path. And I was like, well, Lionel, you're partying with other people. How come you went this direction and they were able to go home? And he goes, I didn't have an off switch. They all had, and you know, they would party and then go home, and they didn't have an off switch. It sounds like that was Ben. He didn't have an off switch.
No, whatever Ben does, he jumps in with both feet.
Yes. And so watching his journey, and for our listeners, take us through his journey, because he was one, he got involved with the running program, was he in Accra? I think he might have been in your first class.
Definitely.
Yeah, he was
been
in all of them.
Went to Accra with us.
Yep.
And, you know, but he was at a point in his life, you know, and he's inherently very intelligent, really able to be honest with himself. You know, that's part of the 12-step process. You got to be brutally honest with yourself. Anybody who's been to a 12-step meeting, you introduce yourself. Hello, my name is Craig Mitchell. I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
Okay. And so, and he was honest, and so he really committed himself to doing the steps, as he would say, in a very sincere way, and he continues to go to the support meetings. And he's been clean and sober, you know, 4 or 5 years now. And at least twice a week, he's at a meeting. He knows how easy it would be for him to go back. But he's got the wisdom and the fortitude to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So he doesn't just get back to playing music a little bit. He ends up being accepted up in San Francisco. Is it the Conservatory for Music?
San Francisco Conservatory of Music, one of the most prestigious music schools in the United States.
And he,
which is a testament to his musical talent.
Right. And how's he doing now?
He's doing incredibly well. He ended up pairing up with Vijay Gupta, who was the chief violinist for the L.A. Philharmonic. Vijay Gupta could see the talent in Ben Shirley, and so they're working now in projects here in Los Angeles. The only reason he misses a run is because he gets a call at 2 o'clock in the morning from some TV or movie producer saying, I need you to write me a score.
Wow.
Okay? And we're talking classical music.
Yes. Oh, I know.
Okay, he's got to know what the violins need to do, what the oboes need to do. I mean, just, you know, so beyond my ability to comprehend.
Well, he's conducting in the film. He's conducting the Philharmonic. It's pretty it's pretty amazing. Now, he's in the Bay Area?
He actually now is in Los Angeles.
Okay, so he still has the group to run with when he's available.
Ben runs with us at least once a week. And that's the beauty of the program. Like I said, we've been around for about 8 years now. There are many runners who this is just a part of their routine. And they have been with us for 8 years. And they are a testament to the new people who come into the program. You know, this is what you can do. This is the success you can enjoy if you commit to the long term.
And when you guys went to Rome and seeing David there, who aspires to be an artist, and being there and looking at Michelangelo and being in the Sistine Chapel, all of those type of experiences, you have to look at that and just go, oh, my God. If you had told me 3 years ago that David would be in Rome and would be looking at the art of the master, the great masters, rather than living in that little hole, there's no way I would have believed that.
No, I mean, I get chills just to think about it. And, you know, sort of a footnote to that, I got a text this morning from David. He's meeting me at noon, and we're running at lunch today.
That is the coolest thing. How just the lifetime relationships, the lives you've changed, that just has to mean everything to you.
You know, if someone asks, what is the number one thing that I get out of this whole experience, I get out of this experience some incredible friends.
Yes. And I'm guessing that a lot of this, especially at the beginning, it's easier to get sponsors and supporters when you've been successful. But when you're starting out, I'm guessing that some of the funding of this might have come from your own pocketbook. I'm just guessing. Just throwing
a
over.
A little bit, yes.
Well, give me an idea. When you guys go to Rome and you're bringing 25 people, 75, 100 grand, what's the expense?
Rome cost us in excess of $70,000. We took 44 runners to Jerusalem a year and a half ago. That was about $150,000. Now, it's an expensive proposition, but it's working, and so it's worth it. And, you know, people now becoming aware of it through the movie Skid Row Marathon.
Yes.
We receive contributions, and I couldn't be more grateful.
You guys are leaving soon. Where are you going next? South America.
3 days.
3 days? Where are you going?
We're going to Guayaquil, Ecuador to run their marathon. Then we will be taking our runners across the Andes to the Amazon. And then after the Amazon, we'll spend almost a week in the Galapagos Islands.
That is unbelievable. And we chatted about this the other day. When people have a goal of a marathon or an Ironman or whatever it happens to be, there's always a little depression that sets in afterwards. You're like, oh, my God, that was my goal. That was my goal, is to get to Jerusalem. Then you come back, and my reality is I'm still living in the mission. Is that tough, Or do the athletes look at it as, you know what, that's just reality. We all go on vacation and we come back from vacation.
You know, and there, when you have hit rock bottom, then to experience the high of going to some wonderful place around the world. I mean, that experience of traveling, I mean, it's a sustained high, if I can use that analogy.
Yep.
Okay. And they're back running when we come back to Los Angeles. And then, of course, then they'll come up to me on a run and say, you know, Judge, where are we going next year?
And you're like, oh, my God, I don't know yet. I better figure that out. I got to have a goal for them. Where are you going next year?
We also we do multiple marathons every year. We get together, you know, in the evenings and celebrate, you know, certain events in people's lives. If you go to the AA meetings, you know, at the anniversary year of your sobriety, a person receives a cake. There are some really positive moments, you know, on a very consistent basis.
Have you ever had any issues taking athletes to, you know, you're in Jerusalem, you're in Rome, any people going off the, basically a little off the Ponderosa and having some issues with, all of a sudden this whole world has opened up to me?
Thankfully not.
Good.
You know, what is wonderful to watch, you know, when we went to Israel, then we went to Jordan, we went to Amman, we went to Petra, you know, and I don't have to do any direction in this regard, but our individuals who are committed to the 12-step process, they will find NA and AA groups in Jordan, in Vietnam. They don't speak the language. Obviously, when we were in Jordan, the meetings are being conducted in Arabic. They don't understand a word that is being said. But here they are, halfway around the world, you know, with people who are facing the same challenges to maintain their sobriety.
I love it. I love what you're doing, Judge. And again, Skid Row Marathon's a movie. And October 14th, 650 theaters all around the country.
Absolutely, and it's a one-day showing, so, you know, we hope that as many people can get out and see it, will do so. The showings are between 6 and 7 p.m. in the evening. If you go to the website, you just simply type in your zip code, and it will give you multiple theaters close by where the movie is screening.
Yeah, it's actually through Fathom Productions, and that's phenomenal. The Spirit of the Marathon movie started with Fathom Productions, and the Boston Marathon movie. So all of our folks are used to the one-day setup for the film, and you guys are going to do great with this film. It's really wonderful. And what really comes through loud and clear in that, Judge, is just what a special human being you are and what you bring to the table, and the fact that I'm sure you heard a lot of no's and heard a lot of, wait, you want me to give you money to bring a criminal to a foreign country? I can't even imagine. But the fact that you have been one of those guys who doesn't say no and just understands
bigger
purpose.
And, you know, Bob, for every no, there are 10 yeses.
Yeah. People understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Judge, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and joining us. Thanks for coming down last Friday and giving us a sneak peek of this amazing movie. Again, Skid Row Marathon, October 14th through Fathom Productions. You can check out the Skid Row Marathon website. October 14th, 650 theaters nationwide. There's no excuse not to see it, and tell your friends, because the film is absolutely spectacular. Thank you, Judge.
Bob, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Again, my name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN, Perform, Workout, Energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops, by Polar. Winners are made of blood, sweat, and data by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. To help out, go to challengedathletes.org and check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here.